And good morning, everybody. Today is February 25th, 2022. I'll call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. The committee, Mr. Brinks, can take this and take the role.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
I'm here.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Bonner is present. Representative Justowski. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn is present. Representative Tosnick.
Present.
Tosnick is present. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Pawlowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Representative Justowski. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Mason is present. With that, Chair Nelson, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. First item on our agenda here this morning is to approval of the minutes. Representative Carlson, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I sure did, Chair Nelson, and I would like to move the minutes for approval.
Motion's made to approve the minutes from February 24th, 2022. All in favor, unmute, please, and say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The minutes been approved. The next thing, bill we have on our next item we have is a bill. And we've got two bills out today, and hopefully we can get through these today. It's House File 1815, Representative Cleavorn. Representative Cleavorn, you want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1815 be before the committee. I ask that it be held over for possible inclusion in the committee bill.
Okay, I've got a list here. I was going to send it to the general register, but
that would be great too. We can. Let me modify my motion, please.
Go ahead.
I move that House File 1815 be before the committee for to be forwarded to the general register. Thank you.
Motion's before the committee. And Representative Cleavorn, you want to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to be with you today to introduce House File 1815. House File 1815 modifies several deadlines related to the activities that occur prior to an election. The primary policy outcome of these changes are, one, an authority to accept absentee ballots to be opened and counted during the 14 days prior to an election, rather than the current 7 days, and two, an authority for voters to cast an in-person absentee ballot using a ballot counter during the same 14-day period. There are other substantive and administrative deadlines that are modified to conform with these changes. You will see in your packets today, and the public may see online, letters of support from the Minnesota Association of County Officers, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Association of Minnesota Counties. With us today, I have two testifiers. One is Secretary of State Steve Simon, and the second is the former Plymouth City Elections Clerk, Sandy Ingdahl. And with that, Mr. Chair, I ask that we move to the testifiers. Thank you.
Secretary Simon is the first person on my list for testifying. There you are. Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I am proud to be with you today. Thank you, for Representative Cleavorn, for bringing us the bill. I'm happy to be Sandy Engdahl's opening act. She's the one you probably really should hear from. She is an outstanding, highly regarded, recently retired election administrator who really has inspired a lot of respect and confidence, certainly in the metro area, but I would say all over the state. So you're going to hear from her. I am her opening act. But I want to talk about the two parts of the bill and why I think that they're really important. The first part, as you heard Representative Cleavorn say, has to do with expanding what we already have. which is the direct balloting period. We have it for 7 days. That's the change that you and the legislature made a few years ago on a broad bipartisan basis. It is immensely popular, not only with voters, but with election administrators. It is absentee voting. It's not early voting. It is regular absentee voting. So if someone goes to Plymouth City Hall or to the courthouse in Watonwan County, and they want to vote during the absentee ballot period in person, if under current law they do it in the 7 days before the election, they don't have to mess with a bunch of envelopes inside of envelopes and then hand it to someone who's just going to open the envelope sometime later. Instead, they can feed their ballot into the machine just like game day, just like election day. And that really inspires confidence among the voters and is far more efficient for election administrators, as Ms. Engel, I'm sure, will tell you from personal experience. This is a relatively modest expansion. Your former colleague, Representative Fenton, had a bill once upon a time that would extend it to 30 days. This is comparatively quite modest. This would extend it only by 7 days from 7 to 14. So for the benefit of your local elections administrator, but more importantly, for the benefit of your voters, this really, really makes sense from the standpoint of just efficiency and smooth administration. The second thing that the bill does, as Representative Cleburne alluded to, is really, really crucial and critical. You, the legislature, very wisely in 2020, seeing what everyone else in America could see what was coming, which is the surge of absentee balloting due to COVID, you very wisely extended the 7-day, what I like to call the head start period. That's the period in Minnesota law before the election when elections administrators like Ms. Engdahl, when she was doing that job, that's the period at which they can start opening absentee ballots. So as you know, we have a 46-day absentee ballot period. From day minus 46 to day minus 7, those accumulating absentee ballots that might come in by mail basically are in a pile, picture a pile. And no elections administrator can touch or open or process any of those ballots in the pile. They can only do it on day minus 7. But seeing what everyone else saw that was coming, which was a surge in absentee balloting, you wisely for 2020 only doubled that period from 7 to 14 days. And boy, did elections administrators need it. Time after time after time, they expressed gratitude to you for doing that, because without that 14-day period, there is really no way that they could have administered the election of 2020. It was a godsend. It was a lifeline. And so, as many of you know, and as you predicted correctly, there was a surge in absentee balloting. And just to give you the numbers, in 2018, 24% of Minnesotans statewide voted absentee. So we were already at a quarter, and then COVID hit. And in 2020, that number went from 24% to 58%. Only 42% of Minnesotans in 2020 voted the traditional or old-fashioned way by going to a designated place on a designated day during designated hours. A large majority, 58%, did not. Now, do I think it's going to stay at 58%? Probably not. There are a lot of people like me, like my wife, who as soon as we can are going to go back to voting in the polling place because we like it. We like to bring our kids. We like to say hi to the election judges, etc. But I don't think we're going back to 24% either. If I had to guess, and it's only a guess, I would say we're going to be safely and reliably at least a third statewide going forward. I would say maybe closer to 40% and probably climbing. And that's because Minnesotans have really taken to voting absentee. This is what they want. People don't want to be told, many people at least, any longer that they can only vote on a given day in a given place during given hours. And so people have really gotten a taste for voting from their kitchen table and they like it. So I don't know what the number is going to be. Probably not as high as 58%, certainly not as low as 24%. And I have to emphasize this, if there's anything all session that I emphasize to you, it's the importance of this provision. 2 days ago, Representative Quam, I was in Mantraville meeting with your local elections administrator, Sarah Marquardt. So I was face-to-face in her office, and as I do around the state. And in recent weeks, I met with Watonwan County. This is Chippewa County. I can't remember some of the others. Those are ones that come to mind. And every single one of them, at least recently, sometimes without me even bringing it up, as in the case of Ms. Marquardt 2 days ago in Mantraville, say, please, 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 make permanent that 14-day head start period. Please do that. They can see what's coming. They can see that there's a lingering affection for this manner of voting. And if they don't get it, if we just leave it at 7 days, if we don't do and extend permanently what you wisely did for 2020 only, they are very, very concerned with the way they're going to administer elections. So remember, our office doesn't count ballots. We don't touch ballots ever. We don't lay a finger on them. This isn't a service or a favor for me or for our office. This is for your local elections administrators in counties and cities and townships who know what the last week before an election is like. They know how hectic it is. They know how pressing it is. They know how anxious and stressful it can be. And they really, really, really want this change. It worked very well in 2020. And there really is no reason why you shouldn't consider, in my judgment, extending it and making that permanent. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleburne, thank you for your time and attention. And I hope the bill gets a favorable reception.
And members, I'll take questions after our next testifier and Ms. Engdahl. And we also have a couple people that are here, David Medea, Nicole Freeman, to help Secretary Simon answer any questions. Ms. Engdahl, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sandy Engdahl, and I am, as Representative Cleburne mentioned, as well as Secretary of State Steve Simon, newly retired clerk from the city of Plymouth. And with that, I just wanted to indicate that I've seen a lot of changes. Before I get into a couple of things, I want to echo a few things that Steve Simon has indicated, but I've worked in elections for 37 years. I've been election administrator for 37 years, and I've been at different sized cities. So I wasn't always at Plymouth, but 4 years at a small town, Winnebago, to 12 years at Mankato, and then 22 years at Plymouth. And I have seen a lot of changes through the years as being an election administrator. And one of the biggest, other than implementing technology or going to the SVRS system, which is a state voter registration system, back in the day when I started, we had paper rolls and all of that. But what I wanted to highlight is that your voters are looking for this change. And so are election administrators. Being able to process those absentee ballots 14 days prior to that have been received up to that point, as well as allowing people to put that ballot through the tabulator, is where it's going. We as a society adapt for everything. We if there's a demand, we do best practices and we listen to that. And your constituents are asking for this. And so are your administrators. That last week prior to the election, there's a lot of things going on other than voting for election administrators. They're meeting with election judges, getting the site set up for the day of the election. And then they've got lines going outside the door from the time they open up until, if you're done at 4:30, maybe they're extending the hours until 5:36. And then to just get all that in and have those results ready for on election night. And that's the key too, is that the public and candidates are looking for the results on election night. They're sitting at home when those polls close at 8 o'clock. And we can't put out election results until we have all the absentees, all the ballots that have come in, even on the drop-offs on election day. Once we have all those things, then those unofficial results get posted to the site that everybody's looking for. And allowing election administrators to process the ballots the 14 days prior to with their absentee ballot boards, it's the way to go. And Secretary of State Steve Simon said a lot of what I was going to say, but coming from an election administrator and from your voters, I'm also a voter as well. This is what your constituents are asking for. And I would request support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Engdahl. I don't know anyone on this committee that sits up at 8 o'clock at night looking for those results. Anyway, I have two hands up right now. Representative Nash, do you want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I understand the desire for this bill. I don't agree with it. And I will point out that there were mitigating circumstances in the 2020 election that drove 58% of the people to use absentee ballots. And those numbers are on the decline. And as a result of that, you've seen the mask mandates being lifted in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And you see people all over the place recognizing that the COVID numbers are dropping. So to use the COVID voting period as a reason to continue this, I think, is a little bit fallacious, and the secretary did at least acknowledge that. But, you know, we just heard from a testifier that our constituents are asking for this, and the secretary can confirm that, as we know, Minnesota is a high voter turnout state, but that Carver County, and in particular Waconia, is a very high turnout area. So I talk to my people regularly, and you know what? They're not asking for this. So people have said that, your voters are asking for this. They're not. In fact, I have asked this pointed question of many of the people that reached out to me in my office about voting issues, and they don't want this. They find that it is something that causes them concern and angst. So, I am not in favor of this, but I do have a question for whomever wishes to field it. What happens when somebody, perhaps 14 days, or if you ask for another bill that we've had of 30 days, what happens if somebody wants to change their vote? Somebody says, you know what, I didn't want to vote for this candidate because now I've found out something about them that I don't particularly like. If you've already fed that vote into the tabulator, what then?
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Representative Nash. That is an absolutely fair question. You're right that the beginning of the head start period, as I call it, which is now 7 days, you made it 14 days in 2020, is the exact moment when the so-called clawback period ends. So they are directly related, right? The moment when Ms. Engdahl and her former colleagues can start opening the envelopes is the date at which you can no longer claw back your ballot. So you make an intellectually honest point. That's true. In my judgment, it is worth the risk. Is there a possibility that someone's going to vote absentee on day minus 14 and then on day minus 11 see a debate or a news story or something their neighbor told them and want to change their vote? Yes, that is absolutely a possibility. And it depends on your risk tolerance, I guess. But a tiny, tiny number of people, I mean really tiny, like thousandths of a percent, choose to do that in Minnesota, even as it is right now. It's great to know that it exists. It always should exist. In my judgment, it is worth the risk. There is that risk. There's no question, but that really is on the voter. Every voter who votes absentee should know and needs to know that that is always a possibility. So some of that risk is borne by the voter, obviously. But you're right to raise it as a question for those for whom that is a big issue. I certainly understand that. But the clawback period, as I'm sure Ms. Engdahl will attest, is very, very seldom used. And extending is the benefits far outweigh the potential downsides, in my judgment. But you're not wrong to raise it.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Secretary Simon. My risk appetite on this is lower than it has been recently. I hear a fairly regular refrain from people in Carver County that they have concerns. They would like to do everything they can to shrink the opportunity for things to be loosened, if you will. And I understand, and I've spoken to the Carver County election folks, and I think that it is nice that we have no excuse absentee, but I just think that there are points that we're becoming too lax. And I am somebody who views Election Day as almost a holy day. I enjoy going to the polling place. I enjoy walking out of there with my I voted sticker. I have taken my kids in years past. And I'll tell you, so do a lot of people out in my district. And I for that reason, will not be supporting this. And I would encourage members to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Nash. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would the Secretary of State clarify, this is basically going in and voting for 14 days of where you just run the ballot through the machine?
Secretary Simon, I think you mentioned that in your remarks, but go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and just with the one clarifying point, Representative Juan, it isn't technically early voting. It's still absentee voting. The voter who goes in still has to fill out an absentee ballot application, either there or pre-printed beforehand, hands it to someone, let's say at the Plymouth City Hall, and then they get to vote absentee. But instead of putting that absentee ballot in an envelope, which then goes inside of another envelope, which then gets handed to someone in Ms. Engdahl's former office at Plymouth City Hall, who's only going to open it up maybe even that day anyway, later that day. It's a little silly. Instead, they can just do what they do on game day and put it right in the machine. We already have this for 7 days. This would just extend it to 14 days.
Representative Quam.
So members and the public listening, this is 14 days of same day registration. But without the system of poll challenging and observers being present for the extra 13 days of same-day registration. And I'd like to bring up to the committee again that when the audit was done of our voter registration system, they found a fair amount of, how should we say, bad registrations. But when the first audit was done, the Secretary of State's office neglected to share the tens of thousands of bad registrations that were verified through the federally required Social Security Administration verification site, which is public to look at. And I've shared with the committee on at least one, if not more occasions, data from that. And so also I'd like the public to realize that when it became evident that tens of thousands of bad registrations were flagged by the federal site, that the auditor did an additional sampling audit because the information wasn't directly forthcoming from the Secretary of State's office. I also sent a letter requesting what was the final determination on these tens of thousands of bad registrations. Received back the reply that, oh, it's the counties that are responsible to do this. And when I queried 15 counties, the response I got back is, oh, we can't do this. We're not doing it. We don't have access. The database is fluid and changing, et cetera. So it became apparent that over election cycles, tens of thousands of flagged bad registrations were not verified, as in going back and double checking, that counties were ignoring registrations on the voter rolls that were marked challenge, and people just coming in and saying, oh no, I can vote, and voting. So now we're gonna have an additional 13 days where a person can come in, register, be a bad registration, but the vote is run through the machine, is commingled, and oops, sorry, too late. At this time when a large portion of my constituency and constituencies across the entire state have concerns about election integrity, we are going to go and add more concern because, frankly, hey, sorry, even though these people were bad registrations, we let them go through. I don't think that this bill will pass both chambers. And What's also concerning to me is in the past we've had election bills that didn't pass both chambers. And then amazingly, almost identical language comes out of an agreement between the Secretary of State's office and a friendly entity that brings a lawsuit. And so through that, we've had the ignoring of election law statute. And so I'm very concerned that there is not the desire amongst us as members of the legislature, as a voice of our people, in improving the confidence in our elections and election integrity, but using gimmicks and friendly lawsuits and friendly judges and jurisdictions that allow for the subversion of state election law and bypassing the legislative oversight and changing actual state statute. So I will not be voting for this. And I really hope that some entity in our state doesn't coordinate to, again, subvert our election law and integrity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I did not hear a question there. So Representative Andrew Carlson.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Wait a second. Representative Claiborne.
Yes, excuse me. I just want to interject here that the assertion that I would introduce any bill to subvert the integrity of our election system and to subvert the integrity of our county workers is patently false. And I just want to make that on the record that that is absolutely out of order. And those assertions to my character and to the integrity of our system are to be rejected outright. Thank you. And please, would you both go on to now Representative Carlson for his question or to Secretary of State Simon?
One second. I'm going to note here that Mr. Medea might be able to answer or give some clarity to Representative Quam's question or statement. Mr. Medea, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is David Maeda. I'm the Director of Elections for the Secretary of State. Just a couple things. This bill absolutely doesn't change anything as far as Election Day registration. Currently, an absentee voter that is not registered can still absentee vote by completing a voter registration application and showing a witness the required documents to qualify as an Election Day registrant. So this bill does nothing to change that other than, as Secretary Simon and Ms. Engdahl pointed out, the voter, instead of putting it inside an envelope, puts it inside a tabulator at the moment of voting. So in either scenario, Election Day registration still occurs. As far as the verification question, just to clarify the process, our office gets the files from the Department of Public Safety and the Social Security Administration. We then there's a process where we sort that and then send it out to the appropriate 87 counties. The counties are the ones that then do the verification process. And in the audit that Representative Quam is citing, one of the issues is if Chair Nelson has a common name, Mike Nelson, if you also share the same last four digits of the Social Security with anyone else in the country, that comes back as not verifiable because you can't distinguish between the two Mike Nelsons. And so that was part of the issue in the audit. I mean, I don't think we need to get into all the details. Certainly we can answer questions about what the audit revealed, but I don't think it's fair to say these are bad registrations. They were registrations that had issues with being verified, and that's two totally different things. And I hope that adds some clarity to some of the questions that were raised.
Well, it's good to know for the 7 Mike Nelsons I door knocked a couple years back in my district. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that years after the audit, there is some response with more information. However, there are not 7 Mike Nelsons with the same last 4 of the Social Security and the same address. You know, let us be clear that when the federal government set up the verification system for HAVA, of which Minnesota is one of 3 states that were given an exemption from the integrity component of provisional ballots when there was a question about the registration. But there are certain systems on election day where there are people present to observe, and if there's a mistake or something of concern comes up, can raise their hand and bring to the attention of the judge. For the additional 13 days, I don't believe that is a present check and balance. So there is less verification. There's not a period of time that allows for, checking of that absentee ballot, or if, again, the person decided to have the option of saying, hey, new information came out, I'm going to change it. But the part of the integrity issue was with what happened by an entity that changed the election process to not be what was in statute. That was the concern, especially after the legislative intent was very plain when that exact same act proposal failed to make it through the legislature. A lot of people see that as a decrease in confidence in our election system. And frankly, if you ignore the large portion of our population that has questions and concerns, go ahead and further decrease that confidence. But I'm just frustrated that, you know, when this came up and we discussed it years ago in the committee, there was no response. And I still have no confidence that anyone is going back and actually verifying all of these. And you can go to that site. I can send the committee once again the links and the data and the information. But we're talking about a very important issue here, and we cannot just sit idly and ignore some of the questions that our constituents and the citizens of the state of Minnesota have, and I'm trying to be their voice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Carlson, did you have a question? I see you took your hand down.
I believe to stay on the same subject matter, Secretary Simon, just to keep the thread here, my comment is related but not to this particular thread. And I'll be short, but let's just finish up this part of the conversation, then please come back to me.
Representative Simon. Or Senator Simon. Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Quam, I've tried to be very, I think I have succeeded in being very patient with you over the last couple of years. We have had conversations in the SOB parking lot. We have had conversations in the hallway. We've exchanged emails. We've exchanged formal letters. I don't know how many other times or how many other ways I can address the concerns that you have, but you are mistaken. You are misreading the data, and you are, in my judgment, wrong. Doesn't mean you're bad. It means we have a disagreement. I don't know that this hearing, I don't know that it benefits anyone for us to go back and forth on the letter and email writing and hallway conversations we've had over the last many years. You've got an election certificate to talk about whatever you want. But let me bring up another dimension of election integrity that is really important. And let me try to just de-escalate all of this by talking about an example from another state that's not Minnesota. And I'm particularly concerned about the integrity effects not giving local administrators enough time to count the ballots so that the public gets results as soon as possible after election night. So let me give you an example from the state of Pennsylvania, specifically the city of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is huge. It's the fifth largest city in America. It's New York, LA, Chicago, Houston, and Philadelphia. It's a massive city. And elections administrators in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania, indeed, saw exactly what you saw, what was coming in 2020, which was there was going to be a surge in absentee ballots. In Pennsylvania, they get zero head start period, zero. They can't start opening and processing absentee ballots until the polls have closed, not just election day, polls are closed on election day. So their Secretary of State went to their legislature in 2020 and say, give us what Minnesota has and Iowa has and almost every state in the country. Give us some head start period. We can see what's coming here. The legislature said, no, you get nothing. You have zero, you can keep zero. But members, the result then was predictable. Anyone could have predicted it. They could only start opening the ballots when polls closed. There was a massive surge in absentee voting. And what happened? Very predictably, of course they were counting ballots into Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Of course they were. It's Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and they were absolutely slammed. But here's the integrity issue. That has led people since that day and to this very day, prominent national figures, to claim that in the middle of the night, 4 days later, there was a dump of votes. Always use that term, dump. There was, can you believe it? In the middle of the night, 200,000-300,000 votes. Folks, that was not a dump. That was a count of actual ballots. But this is how disinformation starts and germinates and spreads and poisons our democracy. That's an integrity issue, too. And to this day, there are people who falsely maintain, falsely, and I would argue in some cases, knowingly falsely maintain, that there was some middle of the night dump of votes. That was a count of validly cast votes by absentee, by eligible Pennsylvania voters. So we don't want anything like that to happen in Minnesota. First, we don't want to slam our elections administrators, but forget all that. Let's say that that isn't your chief concern. Yes, it's a hard job, and yes, sometimes it doesn't go the way you want, and maybe that's not your foremost concern. The people of Minnesota deserve an accurate, honest, fair count, and one that is timely. And my fear is that though we might not be at 58%, and I acknowledge that, we're not going back to 24%. And in some jurisdictions in the state, absentee voting is still going to remain very, very popular. And if you don't elongate that period, you're going to potentially have a Philadelphia-like or Pennsylvania-like situation. And by the way, let me just be honest, the Hennepin counties of the world are going to be fine. They're well-staffed. They have whole divisions that do nothing 24/7 but election. It's the Dodge counties of the world that are going to get slammed. And they're not going to have the results in enough time. And that's going to lead to all sorts of unfounded conspiracy theories that diminish confidence in the elections. So please, I'm asking you, this is an administrative issue, particularly on elongating the count period. Some of you I hear making comments about not wanting the direct balloting period to be 14 days. That's an intellectually honest position. And some of the arguments here I may disagree with, but they're honest, good faith arguments. But on the other piece of the bill, the one that I, sorry, Representative Cleburne, think is the most important, which is elongating that other 14-day period. If you don't do it, it's not about helping local elections administrators directly. It's about public confidence in the outcome. And if it drags on for days and days and days, you have the germination of these really poisonous conspiracy theories, which exist and are amplified to this day about what happened in the state of Pennsylvania. We don't want to be that.
Representative Dyskowski, you've got your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just listening to the conversations, I find some frustrations that we as a committee don't have the ability to talk to each other about the ideas that are coming forward without racing towards victimhood and the idea that someone is trying to impugn somebody's integrity or character. That Representative Cleburne, that was not Representative Quam's intent. I didn't hear him once say what you, the position of victimhood that you raced to was not part of what he brought forward in his discussion. He was simply addressing the idea and the frailties with our very weak election system here in Minnesota And your bill, the idea is a bad idea. That's what Representative Quam was saying. It's a bad idea. It's going to make our elections weaker. If we can't talk about that, Mr. Chair and Representative Claiborne, we are not going to move forward. Racing to victimhood is not how we move forward as a committee. I would encourage us to realize that we are discussing ideas that everybody's got a different idea about. And if we can't do that effectively, we're not going to be successful as a legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Skalski. Representative Carlson, quick comment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quick, thank you, Representative Claiborne and Mr. Medin and Secretary of State for pushing back on some of this misinformation that we've been subjected to during this hearing. I appreciate the truth in your statements. Also, members, you know, if you're going to talk, please turn your cameras on. You know, I want to know that the person that's talking is a member of the House of Representatives. Instead of just
Mr.
looking
Chair.
At the screen on the screen.
Mr.
Also,
Chair.
I have the floor. Also, and Representative Nash, this comment is for you. You mentioned that Election Day is a holy day. Well, hey, guess what? We got just the bill for you. We have numerous holidays that are days off. We can have you sign on. I can get that bill to you right away to sign on to make Election Day a holiday so that people can take the time off from work and go vote. So we can bring that bill forward. We can have that debate, but I look forward to your support in making that a national holiday.
And Representative
Mr. Chair,
Nash,
my name was mentioned. Thank
Representative
you.
Nash, your name was mentioned, and I know that some people, and I know you've had the trouble with your internet speed and stability, then there's some reason some people don't have their cameras up, but Representative Nash.
They just upgraded the internet at the state office.
Representative Carlson, Representative Carlson, Representative Nash has the floor. Please don't jump yet. Representative Nash.
Thank you for correcting Representative Carlson's impetuous nature there, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, you know, you seem to decide to run off on personality-based invectives there. I live in a mostly rural community, even though it's a city. And if you haven't figured out that my voice is my voice by now, then perhaps I should get you fitted with some hearing aids to understand exactly my voice. I have gone on record and have said I'm sorry that I can't always have a reliable video feed. So you're just going to have to not get as personal as you seem to have gotten over the last couple of minutes. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for correcting your member. We have a sense of decorum here, Representative Carlson. I would remind you of that and encourage you to take full advantage of your ability to act as if you belong here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members, that's a good reminder that as we get admonished on the floor many times, the debate is not the personality. The debate is the question before us. And the question before us is whether we should extend the period when the election judges can open the ballots from 7 days to 14 days and the different things that need to be done to accomplish that. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to kind of ground us a little bit and bring us back to the topic at hand. You know, we've heard lots of interesting conversation here this morning, some of it which frankly isn't actually relevant to the bill at all, or what we're doing here today. I do also want to point out that I know I very much respect Representative Quam, but I have to tell you, you know, he suggested that the secretary had not given him an answer to his inquiries. I can tell you I've seen a copy of the letter that was sent to you, Representative Quam, so I know that the secretary is being honest and upfront about that. So he has, I know, attempted to address those concerns. So, but I want to bring this back to the point of this, which is really, how do we make sure that we are answering the call of our voters, that we are addressing the concerns of our county administrators, that we are ensuring that everything is transparent, that it is open, that it is clear what is happening through the process, and making sure that we have enough time for our county administrators to do just that, to make sure that our voters can feel confident that the results that they're getting are the results and that they get those results in a timely fashion on election day. That's what we're asking for here today. We're not asking for anything crazy. We're not asking for any, you know, new rights or privileges. We're basically just asking for a common sense measure. And it's striking to me that why voters are so frustrated with all of us, frankly. We are trying so hard to do the right thing. And our voters are saying, when we bring forward even the most common sense of items, and we have debates like the one we're having right now, where we're talking about personalities and nonsense and things that have nothing to do with the topic at hand, I can appreciate why our voters get very frustrated. You know, this is a very simple bill. It does a very simple thing. And so I really hope that we can overcome some of the nonsense that we've been going through today and the posturing and really look critically at what the bill actually is, what it actually does, and proceed in a way that just makes sense for our city and county administrators. Give them the tools to be transparent, to make sure that voters know and can trust that the results they get are the results. And with that, I'm going to let it go, but I want to thank Representative Cleburne for bringing this bill forward. I know we've looked at this bill before. I know county administrators are asking for it. And so I am really grateful to Ms. Engdahl for coming and bringing forward her expertise on this and to Representative Cleburne. Thank you for your time today.
And Representative Cleburne, I'll let you wrap up quickly and then we can get to a vote. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. And I knew we would have a robust conversation. Our committee never fails to step forward in that regard. I would like to thank all of the members for their time today and for their opinions. The piece that I want us to think about as we take our vote today, COVID has taught us many things. So whether the pandemic is with us or not with us going forward, or if there's a new pandemic, we have learned through COVID that there are practices that work well for our communities, and I believe these 14 days would work very well for our communities. This is, again, a priority for the Minnesota Association of County Officers. This has been a priority for the League of Minnesota Cities. It is a priority for me as a member of my own community, and I ask for your yes vote. Thank you.
And Representative Cleburne, you want to renew your motion to send it to the General Register?
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I renew my motion that House File 1815 be moved to the General Register. And I'd like to thank also Ms. Engdahl for getting up early this morning and joining us and lending her expertise to the conversation. Thank you.
I want to thank her also. And with that, Mr. Brace, will you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash votes no.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Elkins.
Elkins aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason votes aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski votes nay. Chair Nelson, the vote is 8 ayes to 5 nays. The motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the General Register. Thank you, people. Thank you, Ms. Engdahl, for coming out. You look much too young to be retired. But and with that, members, we'll move on to our next bill. Thank you, Secretary Simon. The next bill we have up is the bill we started last week and ran out of time with, and we laid it on the table, or I laid it on the table, or laid it over for future consideration. And so I'll bring House File 208, up, and I, again, I'll renew the motion that I did before, send it to the Agriculture Committee. And we had plenty of testimony the other day. We're going to go to the amendments. And Representative Nash, we have, well, I've got listed here five amendments that have been put up by your members. I'll start with the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is mine.
And you want to move your amendment then?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move the A8 and request a roll call.
Representative Nash moves the A8 amendment, requests the roll call. Representative Nash, you want to explain your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Members, this bill would have a board constituted in a way that is dissimilar with every other board that we have, and it's going to bypass the Senate. And while it pains me to give a tip of the cap to the Senate on almost everything, this is one that I do believe has merit. So asking for this to go before the Senate for Senate confirmation, and that's where questions get asked and people get vetted. And I think that that is a wise and prudent thing, particularly given what I had uncovered at the tail end of last week. So this board could have rulemaking authority. It will have zero scrutiny by the Senate, and it would have members who have expressed opinions about the disposition of agriculture and other things. So I think that being able to go before the Senate for that scrutiny is a good idea. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and look forward to the roll call. I would encourage members to vote yes to adopt the A8.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment. I would push back a little bit on what Representative Nash said. There are actually many boards and commissions that do not require Senate confirmation, not unrelated to this bill. One of those boards is the Minnesota Board of Veterinary Medicine. I have a lengthy list, but out of respect for members' time, I won't read it. But if you're interested, I can certainly send it to you. It's a list of all the boards and commissions that do not require Senate confirmation. I'd also point out there are over 135 individuals waiting on confirmations by the Senate right now. So this is just kind of an unnecessary step that would delay, and I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment.
Any further questions or comments on the amendment? If not, Mr. Brinks, do you want to take the roll on the A8 amendment?
Yes, thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Nash votes aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Nay.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Joskowski.
Aye.
Joskowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, no.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Posnick.
Yes.
Posnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski, no.
Pulaski votes nay. Representative Quam.
Yes.
Quam votes aye. Chair Nelson, the vote is 5 ayes to 8 nays. The motion does not prevail.
The motion does not prevail. We'll go to the next amendment. We have the A9 amendment. Representative Nash, whose amendment that is?
Mr. Chair, my members will announce who's got it.
Okay, thank you. The A9 amendment. Who has that amendment? If no one's going to step up, we'll go to the A10 amendment. Who's the author of the A10 amendment? Representative Kosnick has his hand up there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the A10 amendment and make sure I have the right one. This bill is kind of broad, and we've heard from some testifiers, but I think there's a few others that didn't get the luxury of testifying, but we have heard in letters and such. This bill is very broad, and I think the author, the intent
and actually a lot of emails that received from outside of my district. People think this bill is intended for their domestic pets, cats and dogs predominantly. And this bill is very broad. And that's where a lot of the concern is that we've heard from a lot of other veterinarians and animal groups. So what this amendment does is clarifies that this bill should work with organizations that deal solely with cats and dogs, and should be a friendly amendment to make the bill more narrow in scope and to the, I believe, the intent of what the bill is. So I would encourage members to let's keep this bill for actual cats and dogs. And a lot of the public that has been commenting to us, that's what they think it's for, according to the emails that I've received. And I think either they're being misled or the author intent is it needs to be cleaned up, and that's what this amendment does. So I encourage a yes vote, please.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd encourage members to vote no on this amendment as well. Setting aside the implication that there's any misleading going on, I saw on your last bill that that can lead to some spirited discussion. So I'll try to avoid that. But this, I would argue, actually, this amendment is really broad. It would eliminate a significant numbers of shelters and programs that that do take in dogs and cats, but also take in and adopt out other companion animals like birds, rabbits, and so forth. It would make it so that local governments, nonprofits, and many other organizations that do not work solely with dogs and cats would not be eligible for companion animal boards and resources. So I have a cat running around here, oddly enough. I got him from the Humane Society, Animal Humane Society in Golden Valley. If you go there, 90% of the animals they have there are dogs and cats, but you do go into this one little corner of it and there are a few rabbits. There's sometimes there's a bird or two, but this amendment would rule them out, even though they're the premier, animal welfare organization, I would say, in the metro area. So I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. And, you know, we got off to a slow start because this bill was introduced earlier in the week or last week, and now we're coming back. And so I thought it was kind of a sleepy dog bill, but here it comes back. And what this bill does is let's not horse around and just keep it to dogs and cats.
Mr. Chair, I request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Mr. Brinks, please take the roll on the A10 amendment.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Nash votes aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Nay.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Joskowski.
Aye.
Joskowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes nay.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleborne.
No.
Cleborne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Yes.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, nay.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski, no.
Pulowski votes nay. Representative Quam.
Yes.
Quam votes aye. Chair, the vote is 5 ayes to 8 nays. The motion does not prevail.
The motion does not prevail. We'll go on to the, that was the A10 amendment. We'll go on to the A11 amendment. Representative Kosnick, you raise your hand. Is that your amendment also?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And, you know, to keep hounding this bill a little bit, but we'll offer the A11 amendment. This bill is very broad in its scope additionally, so we couldn't limit it to cats and dogs. So the other thing is the enforcement of this bill is totally open. And in page 3, line 12, you know, we already have laws on the records to enforce, and that's to be assumed and of course, the proper thing. But this bill, as it's written, also enforces statutes that are on the books, but is not limited to that. And so what since enumerated in the bill is and in statute should be what is enforceable. But it, so this bill takes out the clarifies that it's only the following laws that are enumerated in the bill and not so broadly open-ended. So and that actually is in some of the testimony we heard last week was in contradiction to that, that it wasn't so open-ended in that. So this bill, the enforcement mechanism, which I think is a big concern of growing government, and we, you know, why does the state need to be telling somebody in any corner of Minnesota how to take care and provide for their own dog or cat more so than the laws that we already have? So it's just an egregious overreach of state enforcement. So let's enumerate specifically what the enforcement mechanisms would be in this bill. I'm not going to support it anyways because it's for a variety of other reasons, but we can't just have such a wide open-ended enforcement of bills that are laws that aren't even in the books or enumerated in the bill. And so it's kind of sloppy in the way it's written. And I'm helping you out, Representative Freiberg. So I would encourage this also is a friendly amendment to tighten up your bill, Mr. Freiberg, Representative Freiberg.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. I'd encourage members to vote no on this amendment. You know, the kennel law and the breeder law are kind of the main, will be the main focus of the Companion Animal Board as it gets off the ground. But there may be laws in the future that relate to companion animals, and I don't think we should kneecap the authority of the Companion Animal Board before it's even got off the ground. So I don't think we should limit its scope at this time, and I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment.
Representative Quam, I see you have your hand up.
Mr. Chair, and in the communications on this bill, the vast majority of the people are, this is the bill that's going to fix the kennels and the breeders and all these issues we've been having about bad actors. And if we are to do this companion animal board, let's start them out on this main, you know, focus on the issue that the people are very concerned about and that we've been hearing about. And later on, once they get, I guess, this under control, are used to, you know, working in that, then we can look at maybe some of the more obscure issues and broadening. My concern is that if we start out with, you know, out a focus, that we might get rabbit holed into some side things and not quickly address the concerns about these kennels and breeders. And so I think it is, it's quite appropriate if we're going to do a brand new board to have them focused on the main issues that our citizens are concerned about. So I would support this. And has someone asked for a roll call yet?
No, sir.
So I would ask for a roll call. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Mr. Brinks, you want to take the roll on the A11 amendment?
Yes, thank you. Chair Nelson?
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson?
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash?
Nash votes aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner?
Nay.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes nay.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
Nay.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, no.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Representative Brindley, we didn't hear you.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski votes nay. Representative Quam?
No.
Aye.
Quam votes aye. Chair, with a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail.
The motion does not prevail. We'll go on to the next amendment, the A-12 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that would be mine.
Representative Nash, the A-12 amendment. Please describe the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A-12 and request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Freiberg has said and stated that this is largely about companion animals, so I would hope that this would be something that he could get on board with, that it would exclude things like livestock and cervidae or wildlife, so that rather than accept a friendly amendment to narrow it to dogs and cats, we can now go down the road of an amendment that would exclude things like livestock or commercially raised livestock for the meat industry. So I would hope that Representative Freiberg would get on board with this more from an exclusion perspective than anything else. So, you know, we want to exclude the cervidae farms and other things. So with that, I would renew my motion to adopt the A-12 and renew the request for a roll call.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. The way you described the amendment is not the only thing it does. It does limit the definition of companion animal to dogs and cats. And we already talked, and that's inconsistent with state law. Right now it says it's any animal that's kept as a companion, and that can include rabbits, as we've talked about, and birds, and there are some other animals that fall into that category. It would not cover livestock and bears and tigers and animals and farmed cervidae unless they're kept as a companion animal. I don't have a problem with the second sentence of this amendment because, you know, those animals aren't included. I did actually check in with House Research about the possibility of dividing this amendment, just so I could accept that one, because I do view that as friendly. But unfortunately, that's not the only thing it does. And House Research said that just because of the way the amendment is worded and phrased, it's not easily divisible. And that's not the only thing it does. The first sentence in there does limit the definition in an inconsistent manner with state law. So I'm happy to keep working with you on this to incorporate language similar to the second sentence, but at this point, I would ask members to vote no on this amendment.
Seeing no further hands up, Mr. Brinks, please take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Nay.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes nay.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
Nay.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, no.
Cleavorn votes nay. Representative Posnick.
Aye.
Posnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Nay.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski, no.
Pulaski votes nay. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam votes aye. Chair, with a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Motion does not prevail. Again, we still have the A-9 amendment. Is somebody going to claim that one?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
I will take it up. I wasn't particularly prepared to for it, but what this does is it just provides that the monies collected to the board should be sent to dog license funds in counties where the dog license funds is dip below a certain level. And I think that's appropriate with what I understand the intent, and I think the public's intent is to care for more traditional dogs and cats. And disappointed that the committee didn't narrow the scope of this bill to Fluffy and Muffy, but what we have right now is just kind of a whole circus of a bill. And I would encourage that this would help clarify and actually achieve the goals of the bill to help dogs and cats.
Do you want to move your amendment then?
My apologies, Mr. Chair. I do move the A9 amendment and ask for a roll call.
Thank you. The roll call has been requested. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kosnick. I would ask members to vote no on this amendment. It's kind of confusingly worded. It appears to be an attempt to take all the funds out of an account that would be giving out important grants. And it seems kind of ineffective because I don't know of any counties in the state that have dog licenses. From what I know, that's primarily a license that's in the jurisdiction of cities rather than counties. If there's an issue that you know of related to dog licenses or how they're funded, I'm happy to work with you on it in the future. But at this point, I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment.
And just as a comment, I know my city has stopped issuing dog licenses just recently. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that the local counties and, the local people have organizations, and they've got more specific things that they could direct it to. I think it was hinted earlier that some places have a different definition of companion animal or different examples, and this would allow for a mechanism to locally provide funds in this area and allow for future expansion of local organizations and control. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Any further questions or comments? And seeing no hands jumping up, Mr. Brinks, if you want to take the roll on the A9 amendment.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
You're demoting me, no.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Nash votes aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Nay.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes nay.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
Nay.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, no.
Cleborne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, nay.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski votes nay. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam votes aye. Chair, with a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail.
The motion does not prevail. The motion, the amendment is not adopted. All members, that's all the amendments we have. So I'll open it up to questions or comments of the bill. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, I can go last after my members and others might have questions.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And 1 second, lower my hand there. I think we all enjoy our pets, and we know our constituents do. But this bill is kind of in search of, it's growing government, another bureaucracy, another level of government with a lot of enforcement. There's been a lot of controversy on this bill with the veterans, veterinarian groups, and how the enforcement and the mechanisms of this bill operate. And so I think the intent is, we all love our pets and the intent is well-natured, but it's certainly not the role of government to tell people how to manage their household pets. And we're seeing, in a lot of cases, the government wants to tell us how to raise our kids and what to teach them. And now we're even going into pets and everything else. And I'm just kind of astonished really at this being a priority when we have so many other things to figure out and help our businesses recover, and we're not providing them the permanent tax relief for our families or the uninsurance tax that we're going to be imposing on our businesses. If but instead we're looking at over $1 million a year and growing and adding another level of government and enforcement. And it's just astonishing to me that people are, the Democrats are introducing a bill like this as a priority, additional spending, more regulation, other area, another layer of bureaucracy for pets, for pet welfare. And I don't use that, I didn't make that term up to be dramatic. That's actually in the bill. It's in the letters of support. Delivery of services and resources to pet owners, including access to food, pet food, affordable veterinary care, necessary shelter, humane euthanasia, and more, and that at a cost to taxpayers of over $1 million, where people should be empowered to take care of their own responsibilities and their own pets. We talked about the scope and the broadness of it, that this isn't, should have been included, you know, at least the cats and dogs domestically, and we've got, you know, it's very, very broad and controversial when it starts getting into other animal sectors. The letter here says the bill addresses the needs and welfare of companion animals. This is a $1 million bill of welfare for animals. And we've got families that are struggling to provide for themselves, businesses that are trying to figure out how to continue to operate and stay open. So when I walk down Main Street in Lakeville or the other areas, I don't hear people saying, hey, we need a program because we need to take care of more of Fluffy and Muffy. Let's create bigger government and spend more of our surplus on Fluffy and Muffy. What I'm hearing is that we need permanent tax cuts so that families can provide for themselves, so that we can make our economy stronger. And I'm not hearing a call to grow government larger and larger so that somebody can come knock on their door and say, hey, we don't like the way you're taking care of your pet. Really, it's kind of a shameful that this bill is being introduced and that this is a priority to use our time. And I know there is a companion in the Senate, and quite frankly, the senators that signed on to this bill, I think they should be ashamed too. This isn't the priority that I'm hearing from my constituents, and I will be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the pets that we've had over the years was, he was a stud for one of these breeders, and he no longer was wanted. We got him, and in the portable kennel that we transported him in, he didn't want to come out. He didn't know how to play. He didn't, he just didn't know a lot of things. We had other dogs, and he grew to be able to, you know, enjoy life and get out and play. I see, like a lot of people, the need to address some specific bad actors. And over the years, we on our own have taken in some of these pets that had come from those situations. And I think that if this bill was focused on that, we could gain a better state, a more humane state. I see the current bill as being open and ripe for unintended consequences. And I wish this was a focused bill to address very valid concerns, of which I and many of us in the legislature, I believe, share. But we've all had correspondence, I believe, from, you know, the veterinarians and others that are concerned of the way the bill is drafted, that there could be some unintended consequences. And I hope that the public that's listening realizes that we care about trying to address the issues that they've contacted us. We just don't always agree with the best way to do that. And I really hope that the author can come together with others and focus this bill to address a problem area that people have been crying out for. And it also addresses the concerns about unintended consequences. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm just going to lay out a couple of concerns. I think the bill is really expansive, far more than it needs to be. I appreciate my colleagues today offering amendments to try to narrow the scope of this, but I just want to call attention to a few things that I think are particularly concerning and egregious. One, obviously, is just the scope of which animals this would apply to. And frankly, this could easily include backyard chickens or pigs. This could include, you know, 4-H kids with their hobby animals that are show animals raising. I've got a constituent who raises goats for that purpose. This could include animals that are grown for meat, but are our companions in the meantime, right? I mean, I live in an area where tons of my constituents might have, you know, a couple of head of cattle that they're raising for meat, but you better believe that their family, that those animals are companions and that their families are enjoying them in the meantime. So I appreciate the amendments to try to narrow the scope. I can't for the life of me understand why we wouldn't do that and why we're so married to this specific language. Another concern, anytime that a board is appointed entirely by one entity, in this case, the governor, I think that's problematic. You don't get diversity of thought on a board when it is entirely appointed by one person. Under enforcement, it says duties include but are not limited to. That is always concerning. Again, that's very expansive and gives a huge amount of discretion to this board, and we have no idea how it will be used. And I certainly don't believe there is ill intent there, but when we put words in language, those are the words that are used, and we don't have control over that once they leave our body. And then frankly, you know, I see things like this appear over and over and over again, but you know, in the language, it's talking about how this board will serve the broader community. And as part of that, it says, including nonprofit animal welfare organizations. This is not narrowed to the scope of companion animals. This could be any group. So this board is now needs to service groups like PETA and these other sort of radical fringe groups. There's no requirement to that they be focused on companion animals. And there's also no clear restriction on what that support means. Are they going to be giving money? Are they going to be giving resources to these more radical organizations that clearly are not intended under the language of this bill, but the language of the bill allows for it? So I am a no on this today, and I hope that the author would choose to really look into this and narrow the scope, because I think that there actually could be a lot of support for it, but this bill is wildly inappropriate.
Thank you, Representative Brindley. Representative Druskowski, and then we'll go to Representative Nash, and then we can get to that. We'll get to a vote. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Freiberg, for a discussion on the bill. Members, this is another example of a huge effort by Democrats to continue to build government to tell people how to run their lives. Fluffy and Muffy, or Fluffy and Buck, or whatever your dog's or cat's name is, everybody's got a different type of pet. Everybody's got a different way of raising that pet. I believe that the intention of this movement that we've been seeing in the legislature in the past several years to bring forward legislation to tell people how to raise their dogs and cats. I believe that it's the goal of some of these outside groups pushing this that every Fluffy and Buck has to be inside the house. I think that's the direction that they are pushing this. Evidently, we're seeing an effort here to not only tell people how to raise their kids. Democrats are already doing that through the huge amounts of government that they've grown in this state. But now they're going to tell you how to raise your pets as well. And that's the direction that this bill is headed. We don't need more government in this area. We need more freedom. Minnesotans need to get their freedom back. Members, we need to go in the other direction and give people more freedom instead of putting more oppressive government in front of them, taking money out of their pockets in order to pay for the government that's going to tell them how to live their lives. That's what this is doing, and that's why we need to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Then we'll get to wrap up.
Yep, thank you. Members, this is an unbelievably broad bill, super broad. The author has not been receptive to anything that would narrow it to what the countless number of people who have either called my office or emailed my office were looking for. And I'm going to be humorous here. I swear on many of the phone calls that I got, I heard Sarah McLaughlin music in the background talking about giving $19 a day to support a homeless pet. And I would be open to something that was going to try to help dogs and cats to be not in an abusive situation. And I think that's the intent of this. But Representative Freiberg, you have other things in this bill that are mind-boggling. First, your refusal to narrow this is a little maddening, considering that the statute that creates the Board of Animal Health is unbelievably narrow, and I would refer you to Chapter 35. Maybe you might want to give that a little perusal. But here's the thing that we haven't talked much about that I find to be disappointing at best. So for any of us that have carried bills in the legislature to create a certain license plate, I did one for Start Seeing Motorcycles. Others have gone through the abuse to do other things. It is an unbelievably long and daunting process. It took me 3 years to get that done. And I got the stuffings knocked out of me by every transportation chair that ever existed during my time here in the House. But Representative Freiberg would just like to give the board that he wants to constitute here the ability to be like the fairy godmother and bippity boppity boo, you got a license plate. So that is very concerning. Once again, no Senate oversight. And as I stated last week, many of the advocates for this bill are groups that have expressed on their web pages, and we read through them and we didn't hear refutation of those positions, that they are against anybody who is an organization that is in the agricultural space that might be raising hogs or steers or turkeys or chickens. And the bill is written in such a way that a not-for-profit will be receiving the monies that are generated through this board. And these people have expressed their dissatisfaction, their dislike, and their desire to make meat go away. Well, if that doesn't create some concerns for you, then I really don't know what would, because if you drive outside of the Twin Cities, and I would encourage many of you to try that, you'll find that we have agriculture all across our state. We are one of the largest, if not the largest, and Representative Burkle would be mad at me for not knowing this, but one of the largest turkey producers in the country. We produce a lot of hogs. We produce a lot of beef cattle. And these groups that are going to be sitting on this board, many of them are against that. You've got rulemaking authority from a group that has no oversight. You've got the ability to generate cash through license plates and other fees without any oversight. And you are trying a backdoor way to drive that business out of business. Now, like I said earlier, I am all in favor of protecting cats and dogs. We've got two of each. We've got Moose and Mowgli, the cats, Chelsea and Hazel, the dogs. I am a big pet lover, and I certainly think that there is a viable conversation to be had relative to protecting those companion animals. But the author's refusal to look into narrowing the scope of this bill only tells me that it is an attempt to make it so that we don't have to narrow that. And Mr. Chair, I will wrap up so we can go to the vote. But the 4-H kids in my district, I go to the Carver County Fair every year, and they raise these animals that they show. They bring them to auction, but my fear is the way that this bill is written, the argument could be made that when they take those to slaughter, if they choose to, because they've spent a fair amount of time raising them and they are close, that they are going to be considered companion animals and the overreach will happen. So for that, Mr. Chair, I encourage everyone to vote no. And I know we have a roll call, but I just feel like saying roll call.
All bills have to be roll called. And so Representative Freiberg, 30 seconds wrap up. We need, it's 10:01. We need to get this completed. Yeah. Representative Freiberg, you're muted.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to close, and I'll be brief. I do want to respond to a couple points. Representative Koznick said the Democrats are introducing this bill. I think the Senate author, Senator Rood, would probably not consider herself to be a Democrat, and I know from speaking with her about this bill that she's not ashamed of it. Companion animals are a huge industry, and we've seen this even more during COVID. We need an effective board with oversight over this industry, and the Board of Animal Health is failing at its job in doing so. We know that from the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report on the Board of Animal Health's actions during the chronic wasting disease crisis. This isn't a bigger government bill. This is a more effective government bill. There is broad support for this bill. I listed the organizations across Minnesota supporting the bill in my opening comments last week. I will be respectful of your time and not list them again. Frankly, these groups may include groups that make statements on their website that some members disagree with, but frankly, that's not relevant, and it's an attempt at guilt by association. There's nothing in the bill saying these groups will have any input, much less a spot on the board. Very well-respected organizations like the Animal Humane Society, a Companion Animal Center at the University of Minnesota, veterinarians and social workers support this bill. We need a place in state government to regulate a very large industry for companion animals, and the Board of Animal Health has failed to do that effectively. The Board of Animal Health in 2014 issued a commercial breeding license in direct violation of the breeder law. The person was charged with animal cruelty and convicted of providing inadequate shelter. The Animal Humane Society assisted the Cass County Sheriff in removing 133 dogs from the property in one of the largest cruelty cases in the organization's history. So there's an important outreach role, but all in all, it's a great bill, and I would encourage members to support it.
With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 208, as amended, be referred to the Agriculture Committee. Mr. Brinks, please take the roll.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash votes no.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, aye.
Cleborne votes aye. Representative Koznick.
No.
Koznick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski, no.
Pulowski votes nay. Representative Quam.
Nay.
Quam votes nay. With that, Chair, a vote of 7 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the Agriculture Committee. And members, we have our meeting on Tuesday, and we have the final two CFB appointments, and we have one bill listed, and there might be other bills added. Members, with that, say have a good weekend. We are adjourned.